Just tuning in, you're listening to WSLRLP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is the Surreal News, and I am Lou Larini. Our spring fund drive is running through Wednesday, April 14th, and we hope you can donate any financial support you can by calling 941-894-6469 or visiting our website at wslr.org. Your support helps WSLR Fogartyville fulfill its mission of providing a space for community engagement and creative expression, and offer interviews like this one with Mel Goodman coming up next.
And now joining WSLR and WBPV is one of my favorite guests, Melvin Goodman. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Steve. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
And just to remind people, he's a senior fellow for the Center for International Policy, a professor of government at Johns Hopkins, former CIA analyst, and author, Failure of Intelligence, Decline and Fall of the CIA, National Insecurity, Cost of American Militarism, Whistleblower at the CIA, and also as a contributor to columnist for counterpunch.org. So today is our fund drive show, so we are going to be asking people to contribute so that we can get great guests like Melvin Goodman on. And I just want to start by thanking everybody who's contributed so far to WSLR and WBCV during our fund drive, and remind people that if you want to contribute starting right now, you call 941-894-6469. So we have several hotspots in the world, and they're affected by our changing relationship now with the new administration, Russia and, of course, China, too. And we have the negotiations for the Iran missile deal and how that's affected by our relationship with these big powers. So tell us what's going on in the world with these hotspots and our changing relationships.
Well, two things are important at the outset. One is that the international inheritance that Trump left for Biden couldn't be more wretched. Trump either compromised bilateral relations or worsened bilateral relations and basically took the United States out of the international world of diplomacy. So Biden has a lot of work to do. But the other problem is because Trump was so obsequious toward Russian President Vladimir Putin, Biden feels that he has to draw the line and show that a new sheriff is in town and we're going to be tougher. That's why you had that reference to Putin as a killer, which an ABC anchor, George Stephanopoulos, used, and Biden unfortunately agreed with, which gratuitously angered the Russians. It wasn't necessary to make that observation. The problem that Biden faces with regard to Russia and China, actually, with regard to international situations, is Russia and China have now developed the closest relationship they've had bilaterally since the 1950s, and that's never in the interest of the United States. So Biden is going to have to find a way to create an institutionalized strategic dialogue with Russia and China to deal with some of the major international problems. For example, the Iran nuclear accord, which Trump worsened by essentially revoking, the need for non-proliferation of nuclear weapons that includes not only the Iran nuclear accord, but how do you deal with North Korea? The problem of international terrorism, the problems of the Islamic State at a time when we're supposed to be pulling forces out of Afghanistan. We need some cooperation from Russia and China on all of these matters. So for Biden to take this tough line toward both Russia and China at the same time, not only is counterproductive, it's not going to work, but it's strategically stupid because it just gives Moscow and Beijing more reason to act in some common way. And what I think is going on now that isn't attracting enough attention, I think Russia and China are testing Joe Biden. Russia, even though it's not getting a lot of attention in the mainstream media, has put some forces on the border with eastern Ukraine. They've moved in some heavy equipment and sophisticated communications devices. I don't think they're going to bring these forces into eastern Ukraine, but it shows they're still going to put pressure on the Ukrainian government. And our response to that is to draw closer to Ukraine, toward President Zelensky. I think this is a big mistake, because I don't think we have any national interests in Ukraine that are really at stake, but we do have to create a bilateral relationship with Russia. Now, what concerns me, China could be following the same policy, even though in terms of testing Biden, because I've noticed in the recent days they've increased their flights around Taiwan, fighter aircraft that are challenging early warning systems in Taiwan. The last time this happened in a serious way was in the mid-1990s, and President Bill Clinton was faced with the decision of what to do about it. And he took a pretty forceful stand, sending two aircraft carriers into the Taiwan Straits and getting China to back off. I'm not convinced that just because we sent an aircraft carrier and its task force into the Taiwan Straits this time, that China is going to back off. There's a new leader in China in terms of the new, more aggressive Chinese stance in the international community. Xi Jinping is a strong nationalist and is, I think, willing to take a certain amount of risk to enhance China's position in the Western Pacific. And as for Putin, I think he's going to be very protective of those areas on his border, which would include the Caucasus, Central Asia, but primarily, as far as we're concerned, Ukraine. And I think we've already made a mistake in the Bush administration, that's George W. Bush, in considering bringing Ukraine into NATO. That's a red line for Russia. They're not going to sit idly by while we bring in, say, the Caucasus state of Georgia or the East European state of Ukraine into NATO, to allow NATO to expand on its borders, which is a betrayal of an agreement we made with them in 1990 to get their forces out of East Germany as the Berlin Wall was coming down. Now, one of the other concerns I have with this, if you look at the personnel that Biden has appointed on the domestic front, I think they've been outstanding. You know, if you look at people like Janet Yellen at Treasury, or the excellent appointments he's made in the regulatory agencies, whether it's the Environmental Protection Agency, or if you look at Homeland Security and the Central Intelligence Agency, these have been strong appointments. But the appointments on foreign policy include too many people who I think are hawks on the issue of China. And that would be people like Jake Sullivan, who's the National Security Advisor, Kirk Campbell, who's his chief advisor on matters concerning China. Eli Ratner at the Pentagon is a special assistant to Secretary of Defense, the new Secretary of Defense at the Pentagon. They all favor a strong line and think the answer to dealing with China is more military deployments in the Pacific and greater defense spending. I don't think that's the answer, because that suggests we're going to pursue a policy of containment. We contained the Soviet Union, but the Soviet Union was a rather weak state. China is not a weak state. They have a strong economy, the second strongest economy in the international community. They have impressive bilateral trade relations with a series of countries. They are the major trade partner of about 60 different countries. We are the major trade partner of about 40 different countries, and they're growing at a rather rapid rate. So people like Sullivan and Campbell and Ratner and Secretary of State Blinken, for that matter, who think that you can show more muscle in the Western Pacific and China will back off, I think you're going to find out that this is a different China and a different leader. As far as Putin is concerned, I worry about the fact that his popularity has suffered some hits lately, so he's trying to enhance his popularity by taking that tough line toward Ukraine, which is very popular in Russia. But also, and this is sort of is what we saw during the Cold War, resorting to anti-Americanism, pointing to the United States as the source of all of Russia's problems. If you look at the jailing of the political opponent Navalny, who they attempted to assassinate with poison, they're accusing him of being a spy for the Central Intelligence Agency. So, again, they're resorting to this kind of conspiracy theory to try to rally support for Vladimir Putin. So you can't allow these relations with both Russia and China to deteriorate at the same time.
Right.
This is what I'm concerned about.
All right, let me just remind people, we're listening to Mel Goodman, and he's talking to us about our changing relationship with Russia and China and how it affects us around the world. This is also our Fund Drive show, and remind people, please support WSLR. This is Surreal News on WSLR and WBPV. Please call 941-894-6469 to contribute any amount. We would appreciate that. And also, you can also go online at WSLR.org and contribute there as well. One of the things we touched on was the negotiations with Iran for the disarmament, for the negotiations for the nuclear arms. And we seem to be at a stalemate there. And I wondered if you could go there for a minute and just clear up or shed some light on what's going on.
Okay. I think it was the problem started with the Trump administration pulling out of the Iran nuclear accord, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. This was a very important international agreement because it was not just a bilateral agreement between the United States and Iran. It had the support of Russia, of China, and the major European powers, France, Britain, Germany. So when Trump walked away from that treaty, and he was encouraged to do so by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and a National Security Advisor John Bolton, a big mistake was made. We want to get back into the treaty, but we want Iran to make some concessions for us to come back in. That's ridiculous. Iran's position, I think, makes a lot of sense. We pulled out of the treaty. We have to come back in. So just this week, talks have resumed, direct talks between Russia, China, Iran, and the European powers in Vienna. And down the hall, in a room by themselves, is an American delegation led by Robert Malley. And what is happening is, as the talks proceed, a messenger runs back and forth between the participants in the talks and the U.S. Delegation to explain what's happening in these talks. These indirect talks, frankly, I think, are a waste of time. Maybe they're an essential, necessary step to get the United States back into the room, but I think the United States should just bite the bullet and get back into the agreement, get back into the negotiations, and be a part of this effort to control the nuclear program in Iran. And time is just wasting. We want Iran to make concessions. We want them to agree to limit their foreign policy activities and actions in countries like Yemen and Syria and Lebanon and Iraq, where they support militias. The Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action had nothing to do with this. It was for one important reason, to make sure we don't add a 10th nuclear power into the international arena. That's what nonproliferation is all about. And it was a worthy goal and an important goal, and Secretary of State John Kerry did a magnificent job. So we're just wasting a lot of time. Iran is limited to a certain extent, and we don't seem to appreciate this, because they're facing an election in June for a new president. Rouhani, who's a moderate, can't run again. The Revolutionary Guard, that is very powerful in Iran, never favored the Iran nuclear agreement in the first place. So now, because we stepped out of it, they say the agreement is broken, so they've stepped up enrichment of uranium, and they stepped up the manufacture of centrifuges, which are used to enrich uranium. But I think they're doing it in a way to test the international community, to get us, get the international community to put pressure on the United States to come around. So what Biden has to do in this case is ignore the objections of countries like Israel and Saudi Arabia. And I think we can't let the tail wag the dog in this case, and we often do that, particularly with regard to Israel, who tried to block the Iran nuclear accord in the first place. This was something that Bibi Netanyahu tried to do. They have to be ignored. They should be put in their proper position as very secondary characters when it comes to the Iran nuclear accord, which is important to American national security. And actually important to the national security of the entire region of the Middle East and Southwest Asia and the Persian Gulf, for that matter. So there are all of these implications.
Again, I just want to remind people, this is Mel Goodman, and we're talking about our international relations during our fund drive. And again, the number is 941-894-6469. Please contribute to Surreal News and WSLR during our fund drive to keep great guests like Melvin Goodman on the air. What about some other missile agreements that we have with Russia? What's going on with our general agreement, missile agreements with Russia, Bill?
Well, again, the problem is the United States. We walked away from the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, which was the key to strategic deterrence. George W. Bush was responsible for that, and John Bolton was an advisor to Bush at the time. And then Trump walked away from the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty, and John Bolton was the National Security Advisor at the time. Leaving the only major agreement as the New START Treaty, which limits strategic strength, the numbers of warheads and the numbers of launchers. Trump clearly wasn't prepared to renew it, but Biden very smartly, very quickly, extended the treaty. And by doing it in this way, he didn't have to go to the Congress for ratification of a new treaty or a new document. He just extended the old treaty for another 5 years. But what we need to do is get back to an arms control dialogue with Russia. And there, I think it's important to remember that the arms control dialogue was the key to the detente with the Soviet Union throughout the 70s and 80s. And even Ronald Reagan, who was so opposed to the Soviet Union, remember the references to the evil empire throughout his first term, even realized he was making a mistake in walking away from arms control and disarmament. And in his second term, he became probably the president who had more of a strategic dialogue with his Soviet counterpart than any other American president. And you got the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty, and eventually you got a treaty to reduce conventional power in Central Europe. And you got another extension of the Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty. And with that, you got the improvement of Soviet-American relations. Now, I don't know if arms control can be the same vehicle for overall improvement, because there's been so much deterioration in the relations, but it's a start to get a strategic dialogue going. What we need is to remember what Winston Churchill said in the 1940s, that jaw-jaw is better than war-war. This dialogue is extremely important. What we really don't want is to sleepwalk into a confrontation over Ukraine, which, again, has no national security significance to the United States whatsoever. And I would say the same thing for China, because we could sleepwalk into a confrontation over Taiwan. And there we would be fighting in an environment very friendly to China in the Western Pacific and very unfriendly to the interests of the United States. So we need more of a strategic consultation at the highest levels of the national security process, particularly by the national security team, including the Pentagon, the State Department, the intelligence community, to find a way to start this dialogue and to institutionalize it, which I think Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger certainly understood. And their handling of the Sino-Soviet problem in the 1970s was essentially classic. I don't think we can replicate what they did in terms of creating a better relationship with Moscow and Beijing than they had with each other, but at least we can start in that direction and end this drift toward a Cold War that is not going to be beneficial to the interests of the United States over the long term. What we don't understand is the country has, the international community has moved on in the 4 years while Donald Trump was president. So for Biden to come in as he did to put pressure on the Germans to stop their negotiations with Russia over the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, the natural gas pipeline that's nearly complete, Chancellor Merkel just basically ignored us. And we tried to put pressure on Germany not to enter into this economic arrangement with China. Again, Chancellor Merkel ignored us. They sell a lot of cars in China. They sell more Mercedes in China than they sell in the United States. Companies like Siemens and other major German manufacturers play a very heavy role in China. So Biden's got to realize that the international community and international situation that he knew for 8 years when he was in the Obama as Vice President Obama is not the same international situation. We can't get these countries just to do our bidding because we assume we are the toughest cop on the block. is just not true anymore. There's more of a multipolarity out there, and even lesser powers can make waves, whether it's with cyber technology. You know, look at the damage that North Korea could do or Iran can do in terms of cyber espionage or cyber warfare, for that matter. So Biden is right to concentrate on domestic nation building, which I think he's doing, but I hope he doesn't let too much time get away from him and practice a hard line with regard to Moscow and Beijing until he clears up the policy debate and finds a way to create a dialogue with both China and Russia. I think it's essential.
All right, again, I just want to remind people, Melvin Goodman, who's a professor of government at Johns Hopkins University and senior fellow for international policy, has been talking to us about foreign policy and our relationship with China and Russia, et cetera. And on the way out, I just want to ask you a little bit about our radio station and about how you feel the importance of us in the big picture. And this is, of course, during our fund drive. And remind people to support us. Please call 941-894-6469 to support WSLR 96.5, LPFM Sarasota, Florida, WPPV 100.1 in Bradenton, Florida. And Melvin, you've been a supporter of WSLR for many years now and have come down to to Sarasota and given lectures here in Sarasota area, correct?
Yes, I've enjoyed the dialogue, and the reason why I'm so supportive of your station and talk radio in general is that it's only on talk radio and the job you do at WSLR where you get a discussion of these topics that's not really conventional wisdom, that's not just totally supportive of the official American line. And I find in reading the mainstream media, and I'm talking primarily about the two papers I look at every day, the Washington Post and the New York Times, they do a good job. But most of what you read in the Times and the Post are really what government officials speaking off the record or anonymously want to get into the newspapers. A contrarian point of view, or let alone a dissident point of view, really doesn't make it into the press. And it's talk radio that exposes an American audience to the very complex and contradictory situation that exists in the international community. For example, if you read only the mainstream press, or even worse, just watch news on cable television, you would come away with the fact that Vladimir Putin is responsible for all the problems in bilateral relations, ignoring the fact that it was the United States that expanded the North Atlantic Treaty Organization and moved the Cold War border closer to Russia, even after Russia removed its troops from East Germany, Germany reunified, and the Berlin Wall came down. And again, if you just read the mainstream media about China, you would see nothing about the need to have a dialogue with China, that the issue of containment is a very controversial notion among contrarian opinion makers. And that's where talk radio, I think, serves a very important purpose, because if citizens are going to make the right decision about what positions to support in the international arena or who to vote for in terms of carrying out a very difficult policy process, I think they have to be exposed to all points of view and not just get an American line that supports this preponderance of military power that we've based our international position on. If you look at our defense spending, and the conventional wisdom is that our defense budget is $740 billion, that's not true. If you look at all of the defense spending, to include the CIA, the intelligence community, the Veterans Administration, the Department of Energy, Homeland Security, we spend over $1 trillion, probably $1,250,000,000,000 on defense. That's more than the entire world spends on defense. What has it gotten us in terms of a more secure position? You know, this idea that we need 700 military bases around the world, which, again, is supported in the mainstream media, the lack of questioning of the wars we have fought since 9/11, where we've really shot ourselves in the foot, losing a war in Iraq, that George W. Bush lied us into, The fact that 20 years later, we're still arguing about how in the world we get out of Afghanistan. You know, the Soviet Union made all of these mistakes, and it should have served as a warning for us. There should have been a cautionary message there somewhere in their 10 years. Well, we doubled down right now. We're in our 20th year in Afghanistan, and the May 1st deadline for withdrawal is coming up. I think it's going to be hard for Biden to fulfill that understanding with the Taliban because the Taliban is ready to take over the entire country once the United States leaves. But we're going to have to be facing that inevitability at some point. But it's talk radio, and what you do, Steve, I think that allows an exposure to these ideas, and I think it's essential for an informed citizenry to hear all sides of this argument.
Well, your fans in Sarasota and Braden certainly appreciate you and whistleblowers like you that stuck your necks out to speak the truth and speak truth to power. And it's just my pleasure, and I'm honored that I get to put you on the radio. So thank you once again, Melvin Goodman, for joining Surreal News at WSLR.
Thank you, Steve. It's great being with you.
All right. Have a good day now.
Bye now.
Your support makes all this possible, so please make a donation during our spring membership drive.